supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, we'll head down to Arlington, Texas for the NFL draft to see how it compares to last year's Philadelphia event. First, reports circulated recently that as many as 100,000 non-citizens were illegally registered to vote in Pennsylvania. WHYY's Dave Davies reports that state officials are sending out letters to voters whose citizenship is in question, and it's a far smaller number.
The issue grew out of a glitch in PennDOT's implementation of the National Motor Voter Law. People getting driver's licenses were offered the chance to register to vote, even if they just answered a question indicating they weren't citizens. The problem was fixed last year after Philadelphia City Commissioner Al Schmidt raised the issue, but no one knew how many non-citizens had illegally and probably inadvertently registered. Schmidt says state officials indicated an initial data match showed it could be as many as 100,000. But after an analysis, the state says it's following up with letters to just 7,700 voters whose citizenship is in question.
You might think that 8,000 people is not a big number. We just had a congressional race decided in western Pennsylvania by a couple of hundred votes.
Schmidt says the letters are a positive step, but since state officials aren't saying how they came up with their list, he doesn't know if they really have their arms around the problem. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
As Bill Cosby awaits his sentencing date, one question is looming. How will the entertainer attempt to have his conviction overturned? WHYY's Bobby Allen has details on one strategy that Cosby's defense team is expected to take.
When Montgomery County District Attorney Kevin Steele talked to reporters after the verdict, he brought up a document that has been huge to the case, a deposition Cosby sat for as part of a civil suit with accuser Andrea Constan. A federal judge unsealed portions of the previously confidential interview, and that unsealing, Steele said,
got us to the point where we were able to reopen this case and seek justice.
In the interview, Cosby admitted to obtaining Quaaludes in the 1970s to give to women before sex. He talks about encounters with Constan and how he went into the area, quote, somewhere between permission and rejection. Those explosive statements were heard by the jury and factored into their decision to find him guilty. Now, according to sources close to the defense team, Cosby's lawyers are going to argue that when he sat down for that deposition, he didn't know he would be incriminating himself. And those statements ended up making the centerpiece of the criminal charges. Here's lawyer Bill Brennan, who isn't involved in the case.
I mean, that's been the key issue in this case from day one. Why would he have given statements under oath in a civil deposition if he didn't believe that no chance of criminal prosecution?
Did he think those statements could be used against him, or didn't he? Well, that's in dispute, but one thing is clear. Cosby's lawyers think it was unfair for the judge to let the statements in. They fought to suppress them. Yet the judge allowed the deposition to come in as evidence. Appeals lawyer Matthew Stiegler says just because a federal judge unsealed it doesn't mean it should be automatically accepted as evidence in a criminal trial.
The fact that a federal court had unsealed it, that doesn't answer the question of whether or not it was proper to admit it and let the jury hear it in this case. So I think that likely would be an appealable issue.
The expected appeal is just one of a volley of appeal attempts Cosby's massive defense team is now exploring. But Cosby can't file it until a judge sentences him, which will happen sometime between now and July. Legal experts say his penalty will likely include prison time. If so, that will mean Cosby's team will be fighting his appeals case while Cosby himself sits in a prison cell. Bobby Allen, WHYY News.
The Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, is requiring Philadelphia and its suburbs to institute a new regulation allowing some poor renters to live in higher income areas. That regulation has been the subject of several court cases, and HUD Secretary Ben Carson tried to delay it. But now that rule has finally come to the Philadelphia area. Jake Blumgard of WHYY's Plan Philly reports on what it'll mean for local renters.
Like many Philadelphia residents, Maya Hurst needs a little help with her rent. And in 2011, she lucked out, winning a spot in the Housing Choice Voucher Program. Also known as Section 8 vouchers, the program covers as much as 70% of rental costs for those who qualify. But many poor renters wind up in low-income neighborhoods. That's what happened to Hearst, and she found it extremely stressful.
At night, you would hear people shooting outside. You know, if you got off the L at 60th and Market and you had to walk down to where my block, which was about four blocks, you had to ask somebody to meet you. So my safety was an issue. Coming home late at night as a woman, anything could happen.
Voucher holders wind up in lower-income neighborhoods because there's a cap on how much Section 8 will cover. The voucher's worth is based on median rents across the region. That means they often can't be used in higher-income areas, where rents are more expensive. Now, a new federal rule will allow the amount a voucher can cover to be targeted to a zip code instead of a whole city or county. Kelvin Jeremiah is the president of the Philadelphia Housing Authority, and he says the new rule will allow more voucher holders to move to safer neighborhoods in the city or even to the suburbs.
We want our families living in areas where they have access to jobs, have access to good education, and we see those things as what help break the cycle of poverty.
Research shows the regulation should be cost neutral. Although it lets renters who want to live in higher income areas pay more, it also pays less to landlords in poorer areas who have been accused of gouging the program. Jake Blumgart, WHYY News.
Having just completed his fifth quarter in office, let's get perspective on President Donald Trump's approval ratings with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Any change in his ratings that have stayed fairly steady over his tenure?
Well, there has been an uptick in his fifth quarter. He's been in office now for five quarters, Dave, as you mentioned, and his average for that fifth quarter was 39%, his job approval rating. President Trump's job approval rating for his fourth quarter in office was 37%. So he's up a couple of points, but that is still dramatically lower than other presidents in their fifth quarters. Now, we averaged all the other presidents in their fifth quarter since Eisenhower, and that average is 61%.
Does Gallup going forward have to encompass what are inarguably highly polarized times when making this comparison?
We certainly should take that into account because in the past, and we've talked about this before, let's take the administration of Jimmy Carter. We had many more Republicans who were in the opposing party approving of him and many fewer Democrats approving of him than is the case for the appropriate situation now. Republican approval for Trump in the fourth quarter was upwards of 86%. Democrats' approval was at 8%. So there's that huge polarization. People fixed in their opinions, they don't move much, and that makes it harder, I think, for a president, particularly a polarizing president like Donald Trump, to get higher approval ratings when he's just not going to move Democrats off their very negative opinions.
Frank, the Veterans Administration continues to operate without a leader as Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson withdrew his nomination to serve in that capacity this week. Then-candidate Trump prioritize the nation's men and women who serve. I surmise that's one area of bipartisan accord.
It is. When we were looking at policy proposals made by both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump leading into the 2016 election, we tested a whole bunch of them. And the ones that came out very near the top were President Trump's often made assertions, as you noted, Dave, that he was going to come to the aid of veterans, clean up the Veterans Administration, really do well by veterans. So that's a key priority for Americans, and that cuts across parties, Democrats and Republicans. We also know that the military is the institution that has more confidence than any other institution in American society. Americans are very positive on military officers when we test them as a profession. So everything about the military at this point in history is extremely high, which indicates that Americans would really want President Trump to be able to appoint somebody to head the VA who is competent and experienced and able to do a good job.
Frank, France was in the spotlight this week with its president addressing a joint session of Congress. Americans' views on France seem to fluctuate. Where do they stand now?
Very positive right now, but as you mentioned, we only have to go back to 2003 to find a time when they were very negative. In 2003, less than 40% of Americans said they had a favorable opinion of France. Why? Well, that was the point at which France did not come along and join the U.S. and others in the Iraq War. Well, that was basically a pretty short-lived phenomenon because Americans' opinions about France have now begun to go up in the years since. And right now, we just tested this in February before the visit of the president, of course, of France. 84% of Americans now have a favorable opinion of France, up about 50 points from where it was in 2003. And that puts France as one of the countries that Americans like more than any other.
Do French citizens hold America in the same esteem as we do them?
We have to be careful about the wording, because we just did an analysis of how individuals in countries around the world thought about U.S. leadership, not the U.S. as a country, but U.S. leadership. And what we found is that France, along with many other European countries, opinions of U.S. leadership had dropped dramatically from 2016, Obama's last year, to 2017 when we tested this. 25% of residents of France interviewed last year said they had a positive opinion of U.S. leadership, putting that way down in the bottom rank of countries around the world.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. Car maker Subaru opened its new U.S. headquarters in Camden today. The company moved from just down the road in Cherry Hill, thanks to a generous tax break from New Jersey. While officials are hailing it as a new day in Camden, critics call the move corporate welfare that will not benefit city residents. WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports.
The new headquarters is just a five-minute drive from Philadelphia. It's on a redeveloped lot across the street from Campbell Soup, which has been in Camden nearly 150 years. Now it's Subaru's turn to plant its flag in the distressed city that boosters say is experiencing a once-in-a-generation renaissance. The new mayor, Frank Moran, says when companies like Subaru come to Camden, they provide a lifeline to residents looking for jobs.
As someone who grew up in this city, I will tell you, my residents are committed. They have dreams and the ability to succeed. What they need is opportunity, and that is what Subaru is offering here today.
Subaru of America President Tom Dahl says the new headquarters will bring together more than 500 full-time employees and create 100 new jobs. Dahl says Subaru has expanded so much in recent years that it was spread across four different South Jersey locations.
And as a result, we're losing a little bit of the connection that got us to the success that we've enjoyed. So we really needed to bring everybody together as we've grown.
The story of Subaru's move to Camden really dates back to 2013, when New Jersey passed a bill greatly expanding the state's tax break program for businesses. The Japanese car company was one of the beneficiaries, getting a $118 million tax break to move 5 miles down Route 70 to Camden. It's one of 30 companies that have gotten tax breaks to either move to or stay in Camden and create new jobs. Opponents say the program is corporate welfare gone wild. Sheila Reinertsen is a senior policy analyst with the left-leaning think tank New Jersey Policy Perspective. She says the state is giving up all of this tax revenue without seeing much of a benefit.
By almost all metrics, New Jersey's economy is still lagging behind its neighbors and the rest of the country. So we really feel strongly that there should be reforms to the program.
Reinertsen says the state should consider capping how much it gives out in tax breaks or stop giving out subsidies for relocating existing jobs. Critics say the loss of tax revenue will mean taxpaying residents will have to pick up the slack. Kelly Francis is president of the Camden City Taxpayers Association and a past president of the city's branch of the NAACP.
We're using our resources, our roads, our water, sewer, our fire and police personnel have to provide services. And it's costing us a lot.
But supporters say tax breaks have been a critical part of Camden's revival, luring companies that would have otherwise set up shop elsewhere. Companies like Holtec, the Philadelphia 76ers, and New Jersey American Water. Subaru President Tom Dahl says there's no doubt the state's gamble on these companies will pay dividends for Camden.
Remember, people said the same thing when we moved into Cherry Hill. A number of 32 years ago. When we moved into Cherry Hill, there was nothing around us. We had a burned-out racetrack across the way. We had no-tell motels along that Route 70 corridor. And now look at it, right, 30 years later.
With Camden, he predicts that revitalization will happen much, much faster. From the New Jersey desk, Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
The NFL draft continues in Arlington, Texas through tomorrow. On site for the event and joining us now is WHYY's Tom McDonald. Tom, sounds festive down there.
It is festive, but the second round is nowhere near the number of people that turned out for the first round, which was nowhere near the number of people who turned out for the first round in Philadelphia.
Well, as you bring it up, contrast the difference between having a spectacle outdoors along the Ben Franklin Parkway versus on a parking lot.
Well, it's interesting because the festivities themselves are in AT&T Stadium where the Cowboys play. They've taken the one end zone of the stadium and made it into something that would remind you of World Wrestling Entertainment's show. All kinds of digital signage. They've clustered the fans in little areas, so each group has their own little section in the stadium. Outside is reminiscent of what we had in Philadelphia, where we had the whole parkway with different events, places to buy food, places to buy souvenirs. But it's in the parking lot of a stadium, so there is no hominess, there is no warmth. It's the parking lot of a stadium. And you look at it and contrast the two back and forth, and there just is no warmth here. It's just concrete and a lot of police officers. And it is interesting to say, though, a lot of people from across the country have come out here, including some Philadelphia Eagles fans who don't necessarily live in Philadelphia, might live locally. But there are also some from Philadelphia. I talked to a couple from Delaware yesterday. They didn't go to the draft in Philadelphia, but they came here to Dallas because they wanted to see AT&T Stadium.
Last year's event was so Philadelphia-centric. Can you even tell that this is all about Dallas or even all about Texas?
You know, it really doesn't have that homey Texas feeling. I mean, instead of the hot dogs and hamburgers or Philadelphia soft pretzels, there are Torchy's tacos you can buy here, and there are water stations, but they don't say the same way Philadelphia says water.
Now, given our proximity to Baltimore, New York, even Boston and Pittsburgh, I imagine fans came from those locations to last year's event. Similarly, are fans coming from all over the country to Texas?
The NFL has made this into an event of festivities, and it was interesting to say that the TV ratings, they put it on broadcast TV for the first time this year, and the combined ratings were almost as much as a baseball playoff game. They have homogenized this. They've taken it out of New York City and are moving it around the country, Philadelphia, Chicago, and now Dallas. And it seems like it's going to be a major event if you're a football fan every year. One of those bucket list items.
And what's the status of the event coming back to Philadelphia?
No update on that right now. Philadelphia definitely was a lot more expensive than it was in Dallas. They don't have all the labor issues that we have in Philadelphia. It's always a two-year deal. They have a first year, which is definite, and the second year is a contingency. Nobody said whether they will accept the contingency for a second year. But the NFL does like it here in Jerry's Place, or AT&T Stadium, as it's formerly called.
Now, you've noted that there are some Eagles fans on hand. Of course, the Eagles-Cowboy rivalry long precedes the Super Bowl win last year. But are Eagles fans walking with a bit more swagger, given our status as Super Bowl champs?
Absolutely. And the one thing with the trading of the first-round pick, we did not get to hear the Super Bowl champion or world champion Philadelphia Eagles last night, saved by Roger Goodell.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Dave. Have a good weekend.
WHYY's Tom McDonald. And this program note, ahead at 6:30, while the NFL tries to make this rookie draft event in Dallas a spectacle for fans and local businesses, Marketplace will take a look at whether the investment is worth the result. That's Marketplace ahead at 6:30 on WHYY. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. At the helm this week, Bob Alls, Charlie Kyer, and Adam Staniszewski. Our news director is Eugene Son. Assistant news director, Katie Colinari. John Mussoni is assistant vice president for news operations. Sandra Clark is Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller. News Works Tonight.